Hello, friends. It's getting a little late here, but I thought I'd try to do one program for you. We've been working on different kinds of mantras, and really, their sources and their purposes are quite amazing. We've come now to the section which deals with mantras of power. And, well, you know, you can just go back and see all that we have done. Quite extraordinary, the variety of mantras that can be used and forms for calling in the devas and for protection and for invocation. It seems a very complicated and extensive matter. But okay, we're getting our feet wet here and we're learning about these factors that about which Master DK wants to inform us. So mantras of power. The mantras that hold the secret of power are, as you know, and have been told, of different kinds, and they are primarily four different kinds. Okay. Of prime importance are the protective mantras, and I think I showed you this in the rules for white magic. The words that will protect him from the work of certain devas, which are dangerous to the unprepared magician and can even lead to death. The mantras that call the elementals and lesser devas, remember the greater devas have to be invited, and the best way is by similarity of vibration, and bring them into the magnetic radius of the one who calls. And again, the one who invokes is the commander here, but must be very careful, lest he become overwhelmed by the chaos of the elements. I mean, after all, we can be buried, we can drown, we can be burned up, and maybe, you know, although there's said to be no death by air at this time, we can be blown apart. The mantras that impose upon the elementals and lesser devas the will of the one who calls. So first comes invocation, and secondly, imposition of the will of the one who invokes. They are different functions. And then mantras that break the charm. These, of course, you know, are terms used in conventional magic, if I may put it so, and place the elementals and devas again outside the magnetic radius of the caller, so that they no longer interact with the caller. Egotistical magicians have long prided themselves on what they can call, what they can summon, high or low, you know. I think Aleister Crowley did a lot to popularize magic of a rather egotistical nature, and you can even see would-be magicians competing regarding the kinds of entities they can summon. There is a low magic. What's it called? Geita, low magic. And there is something much higher that can be used on behalf of the plant. It's so interesting that Master Moria seems in his writings to inveigh against magic, and yet he was King Solomon, who was a very proficient magician. Maybe he just knows the dangers involved in any of these ritualistic approaches. One has to be careful that the ego is held in check. Otherwise, inflation is very likely. So, what do we have here? We have protective mantrams, you know, just to. We have mantrams that call the elementals and lesser devas. Notice he is careful there. He's not just talking about any kind of deva. For instance, those that are on the same scale as a human being, or those who must be obeyed. You know, the old saying is about devas. Some obey us, with some we cooperate. And with others, in regard to others, we obey. Occult obedience is so important. It's a way of cautious approach. We're not going to be misled. Rules are laid down by those who have succeeded, and they want us to succeed too. And so it is the part of wisdom to follow cautiously what they have to say. Mantrams that break and release the charm. Think of the things we say to people. Oh, you look so enthralling, meaning captivating and imprisoning. And oh, you look charming, meaning you have some kind of magical effect over me and I'm falling into your power. You know, and this can relate also to sex magic, all kinds of, you know, captivation. Anyway, you cannot hold and bind. Yeah, Master DK talked about all of the little devas, I think, that he had somehow captured in order to write his books, and that they would one day have to be released. He didn't say much more. But, you know, captivation for the period of a purpose is perhaps allowed if the purpose is a good one. And otherwise, those who are held captive must be released. Of course, when the members of the Lodge of Materialism want to captivate us, you know, a bit like putting your soul in a bottle, you know, that's the old kind of idea that has to do with the genie and the lamp and all kinds of Arabic magic. They do not intend at some point to release the captive. They keep the captive in perpetuity as long as they can, as a servant. We don't want to fall into that. These four groups of mantrams refer especially to the calling and contacting of the lesser grades, and are not much used except in rare cases by initiates and adepts who, as a general rule, work through the instrumentality of the great guiding devas and builders. So it's not that the masters descend and start working with these lower elemental and devic lives. They know that the Raja Deva lords have great control, and they are cooperating with the Raja Deva lords in the sight of Sanat Kumara. We're told that the Raja Deva lord Kashiti of the seventh plane and Varuna of the sixth are in these shambolic meetings. Are they council meetings? Well, anyway, they are meeting with Sanat Kumara in order to plan next stages of the plan. The Dark Brotherhood works with the forces of involution and bend to their will the unwitting lesser forms of life. So again, captivation, enslavement, robbing others of their freedom and their will and making them servants. They experience servitude. I guess it comes first. But of course, we can have servitude with respect to the higher powers too. That's much better. But the higher powers do not compel the will. They simply invite with attractive reasoning the cooperation of the aspirants, disciples, and initiates with them and their projects. The true procedure, as followed by the Brotherhood of Light, is to control these involutionary groups and low-grade devas. They're different, you know, elementals and devas. The devas have turned the corner, but on the way down, following the path of involution, elementals who do that may be on the same level as those who have turned the corner and are following the path of evolution. It's just that the next move is very different when comparing. So, involutionary groups and low-grade devas, through their own superior ranks, the control, the cohorts of the building devas, and their Raja Deva lords. So control is exerted by those of their own kind. Control over the lesser devas is exerted by the higher devas. We have not so much idea about the details of the ranks of these devas, but it has been a subject studied deeply within certain churches, and I've been told that the Byzantine Church, you know, the Greek Orthodox and Russian Orthodox, they have a lot of information on these things. But again, that's their esotericism and not something that is so frequently shouted from the rooftops. Bend to their will, the unwitting lesser forms of life. These lesser forms of life, we're talking particularly about elementals, don't really know what's happening to them. They are just swept along by the greater will of these intelligent initiates who have associated with them trends from the previous major manipulative solar system. So there is a truer procedure for the control of these elementals and lower devas. So the truer procedure is to control these involutionary groups and low-grade devas through their own superior ranks. The cohorts of the building devas with their Raja, Deva, Lord. I'm sure things are very organized and stratified, and there are the serried ranks, we are told, with respect to the Deva kingdom. Okay. This brings me to another group of mantras used in connection with the devas themselves. Okay. We're just kind of collecting in our thought the various types of mantras, their use, their origin, the degree of power that they possess if properly used, or if I don't say possess, I can say induce. So, another group of mantras, and I just want to make that stronger. Rhythmic mantras that put the one who uses them in touch, in contact with the deva group that he seeks. Rhythmic mantras. And DK is quick to remind us that not only the notes on which the mantra must be enunciated or sung are now missing, but the rhythm, the meter, is not available to the one who uses the mantra. Rhythmic mantras that put the one who uses them in contact with the deva groups he seeks. So rhythm has its own contacting ability. Its own ability to place on rapport. With groups to be contacted. You can sometimes walk into different spaces and you can feel different presences, but okay. In order to really pull or invite these devas into one's magnetic field, one has to know how. So more of the secrets of initiation. These mantras, of course, are forms of ray mantras, for they call the devas on some one ray. You can imagine that the first thing we might do, if we were in possession of such mantras, is begin experimenting, and idle experimentation is so often dangerous and profitless. We have to work with purpose. And knowing our limits and knowing possible consequences. All of this is coming when certain of the masters externalize on the lower planes and can convey and supervise the necessary teaching. These mantras again will vary if the man himself is on the same ray as the group he calls. So, the science of the seven rays has all kinds of applications. Psychological preparation for initiation, also offering deep understanding of the whole occult process, also offering the possibility of initiation and other faculties which attune the man to points of tension that otherwise he might not reach. So thus enhancing the expression of the ray in the life. I'm sure each one of us reviewing our ray chart would like to see our ray usage enhanced according to the need of the divine plan. We detect and we see what ray we are using. You know, you just stand back and you see, well, I'm using that particular approach quite a bit, but, you know, how well are we doing it? And so the mantrams will help us do better. You may ask why protective mantrams are not first used in the case of calling elementals. And principally for the following reason, the mantrams calling elementals are more easily found and used than those calling the devas. Okay, well, sometimes we take knowledge out of circulation, or we allow it to die out. It's quite close to the surface. It can be retrieved, but for the sake of the human condition, it's better that mantrams that were practiced and misused are no longer practiced for the time being and no longer, therefore, misused. The history of instances of where this has been done, and all over the world, even at this time, people who hold the secret that will put them in touch with the elementals of one kind or another. So why are the mantrams for calling the elementals not used first, as in the case? Why are the protective mantrams not used first, as in the case of calling the elementals? Okay, that's more correct. One is just amazed at how careful one has to be, step by step. Caution. Material where one false step can make the difference between success and failure and even life and death. Good thing that the seventh ray types are as meticulous as they are. The mantrams calling elementals are more easily found and used than those calling the devas. Well, yes, that figures. I'm remembering some of the public ceremonies that AUM, Ancient Universal Mysteries, did, and some of them had great invocatory power. They were calling and summoning, hoping to summon devas who were of no small attainment. But I think it was quite a guided and safe process because the knowledge was sufficient. History is full of instances of where this, So they're full of instances where this has been done. And all over the world, even at this time, people who hold the secret that will put them in touch with the elementals of one kind or another. It's just esoteric occult knowledge, and it's not yet shouted from the rooftops. So we have to assume that much more is known than we imagine is known. And Master Moria has talked about the scattering of knowledge all over the world, telling us we put that together, we will have something resembling what the transfiguration can mean. Only it's a spread distribution. when the individual has that kind of distribution, which at first involves the group, then the third initiation can be taken. Everyone in Atlantean days knew how to do this. You know, Milarepa, well, years later, he knew how to summon the storm clouds. And his great sin was to send them against family enemies, something that he had to atone for quite a long time, though he was of amazing attainment. So even everyone in Atlantean days knew how to do this, and among savage people and by some individuals in civilized countries, the art is still known and practiced. Sometimes our anthropologists and our explorers, exploiters go into civilizations that are relatively rudimentary, and they find these very sophisticated methods of approach, much to their shock and horror and, you know, their general surprise. Okay. But that's quite a statement. Everybody in Atlantean days, I mean, you know, just imagine using the weather against each other. Now, I'm sure that is crossing the mind of many who are making advances in weather control. Unfortunately, the negative application so often comes first, and only then do we settle down and realize the greater advantage of the methods that we have, and we try to do something that assists everybody, but it could cause real chaos to send the weather against somebody and to retreat to the midway point. As we watch those released forces do their destructive work. Well, we're going to have to watch out in the age of magic, which is coming, because that possibility is definitely there. But people will, when they discover a new power, I mean, just think what lasers can do and how they operate in medicine, and just think of everybody's idea, oh, now we have the death ray and we can send that ray out against our enemies, knock down satellites and airplanes and so forth. So this is not so uncommon, the summoning of the elementals. Secondly, the average man, even if he knows the mantram, will probably fail in calling a deva, for it involves something more than just chanting the words and sounds. This something is one of the secrets of initiation. Well, you know, the deva kingdom meets on the second ray with man. I remember making a little tabulation from A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, where man was possessed of the first and second ray, and the devas of the second and third. And they met on the second ray, which they both shared. So calling devas is much more difficult. To call in elementals to command is possible, but the motive really has to be correct. And there's such a tendency to misuse any new technology. Always a negative appears first, and then one realizes, ah, this has application in some salutary process related to the ashrams. you know, you think about radiation and how it works with respect to cancer treatment and maybe other things. But at first, let's build a bomb, you know. That's the way humanity tends to think. And we're told, you know, that lotuses from Vulcan, maybe from a certain extent, from Mercury, scientific lotuses came to Earth because they had the opportunity to really develop the second petal. They've been developing petal 1 and 3, but they have to fill in with the love part. And so for a while, the scientific community has to be closely supervised. I didn't see the movie, but I understand there was a movie called Splice. It was about gene splicing and hybrid forms, a woman and a cat spliced with some very unpleasant results, you know. And just because we can do something doesn't mean we should. So there has to be a keen, plan-centered morality around the potentials to do many things which maybe are doable but not desirable. When a man is an initiate or an adept, he needs not the protective rites, for it is a law in the occult world that only those of pure life and unselfish motive can successfully reach the day of evolution, whereas in connection with the elementary lives, it works the other way. So there seems to be a tendency when dealing with the elements for the man of impure life and perhaps selfish motive to be able to reach the elementals. Well, as long as we can keep this distinction clear, then we have the proper way of conducting ourselves. All these are the temptations of the future, because there's so much experimentation that is possible along wrong lines. And even today, in the ignorant raising of the Kundalini, according to the instructions from Eastern teachers mostly, a lot of damage is being done that sets people back lifetimes as they have to do the repair work of the fiery, of the damage they've caused through prematurely released fire at the base of the spine. So in the path of occultism, we are playing with fire. And only through humility and obedience can we really approach. We must not be tempted. Lead us not into temptation. It doesn't only have to do with falling. It has to do with the wanting to become a god, wanting to be raised up prematurely. Remember in the Roman days how different, rather insane emperors fancying themselves to be gods and wanted to be worshipped and treated as such. Probably they didn't have all of the techniques here, but still the tendency, the very egotistical tendency was there. Egotism and occultism don't mix. That's why we really have to be humbled, and the scene of that humbling is so often the fifth petal of the egoic lotus, where we are falling from the tower and crashing down until we wake up and realize that a lofty tower where we pridefully hold ourselves above others and use what we know for our own advantage and at the expense of others is not allowed. And we say to ourselves, oh, I would never get into that. But you never know. I'm remembering, you know, I don't really go to that many movies, but they have a memorable impact upon me. And I'm thinking about this very beautiful kind of elfin queen. And so far away from evil. But all she had to do was put on the ring of destiny, basically. And she immediately transformed into a threatening and overpowering, potentially malicious figure, because she was faced with that kind of the possibility of egotistical empowerment. And she was as if going mad until she took the ring off and wondered what possessed me. Okay. So that first type of mantram here that we've been studying, if I can only remember my own outlines, you know, or Master DK's outlines, shall we say, rhythmic mantrams, all right, rhythmic mantrams, you know, and one thing you can do is make it just so big that you can't overlook it. Then you know it's there. So, you know, we're in a section called Mantrams of Power. And the potential of mantrams is just hardly suspected. We use mantrams that are released for us by Master DK, and they're not in the original language. They're not chanted or sung upon the original note. They're rhythmic presentation is not observed because we just have lost the rhythm. And, you know, they do something in the world of thought, but that's it. They don't have the original power. So the masters have to prevent the plan from falling prematurely into the hands of the Dark Brotherhood. And along with that, being unreliable as we are, they have to prevent more of the plan that is considered dangerous from falling into our own hands. And we'd say, well, aren't they just there to give us information so that we can learn more and more? Well, it's the wise and discreet giving of information that is truly constructive. Otherwise, watch it. It's going to become, as Master Moria calls it, an impermissible fray. Okay. Now, mantrams that permit the intercourse with the devas once they have been called. You know, we're going to be speaking with the devas or communicating with them in some way, maybe not in conventional ways at all. When it's permitted, we have to know the proper means. So speech as we know it is not understood by the devas, but impulses, forces, vibrations can be set up by the use of specific forms that lead to the desired result and obviate the need of speech. I guess, you know, they are so sensitive, the higher ones, that they don't need that veil that we call speech. They get the energy beneath what we might say. And here we have impulses, forces, vibrations. That's their language. And whatever we say underneath it all are these impulses, forces, and vibrations. And they pick them up. And maybe they communicate that way. And then we have to translate it into our speech. And these forms open the avenues of mutual comprehension. So it's nice to know how it's done. And we have to be very feeling persons. We have to actually feel the energies which are attached to the words we use, and then the devas will pick up on those energies and forces and the energy impulses and the vibrations. They'll pick up on them and they'll know pretty much what's behind what we're saying, until we get to the point where we don't have to say anything, we just release the forces. DK says, well, when we read a book that you have written, we're not reading words. We're getting a comprehensive symbol. And we read the symbol of everything that you put into that book and its essential geometrical structure. That's what we're getting. So there are ways to condense time in the initiate world, because the efficiency with regard to time is very important, time being of the essence or leading to the essence, the right use of time leading to the essence. So we have to keep in mind speech as we know it is not understood by the devas. I suppose, though, if we are earnest enough and the energy behind it, behind the speech, is very potent, then the devas will pick that up, ignoring pretty much what we say, but somehow understanding the need. That's what we will be doing. And then, of course, we have to be pure and clean and not let the kinds of currents that would attract unpleasant elementals and those that have affiliation with the Black Lodge into our magnetic aura. There's just so much to be done. No wonder we have life after life to do it. But if we're aware of what has to be done, somehow that will carry over, and then the inner monitor that monitors the appropriateness of what you think and feel and do, that will spring into action, and you will be warned when you're about to trespass. You don't glibly step outside the circle the magician has drawn if you're within that circle, because outside the circle is a place of danger. So you don't just impulsively step outside that circle. We learn a different way. Okay. And then mantras that influence groups and others that influence specific devas. I would like to point out here that as a rule, devas are handled in groups and not as individuals until you contact devas of a very high order. But this is the group approach to the Deva kingdom, largely unless we are in touch with greater devas. And didn't he say there's a great green deva that works with physicians? And I thought he talked about a particular violet deva. Maybe there you can contact the individualized deva, who is higher in status than the human being. So, group contact. that's something we have to remember. So much to remember. You might say too much, but as you stay with it and keep practicing, it becomes natural to accumulate the knowledge that you need. And I would like to point out here that as a rule, devas are handled in groups and not as individuals until you contact devas of a very high order. And, you know, we've certainly seen already that those ancient Sanskrit mantras, and even more so the ancient Senza mantras, are even much more powerful. The whole thought of setting up, using a mantram which could help us contact the Raylords in Shambhala or the planetary Logoi. You know, there's really a case where we have to make sure that we're not the fools that rush in where angels fear to tread. We become impatient. And we don't know our place, nor do we really know the place of the ones we seek to contact. We need that adjusted sense of right proportion, that humility that is so Libran in nature. We need that, but we have to have the experience that will reveal that to us. At first, we, you know, the British explorers and exploiters saw the ten-armed god and said, oh, these are a bunch of idol worshippers. And they were completely non-responsive to the deep symbolism which the various statues represented, rather than objects of worship. And if there was worship going on, it was through the form of the god that the true God was reached, or the true higher deity. So it's wiser not to judge too quickly, but to become familiar with the culture, any new culture in which you are immersed. This is the cautious and respectful way, rather than just imposing your own idea of the right. You know, when the Spanish conquistadors and the accompanying priests came to the Aztec culture and various Indian cultures of South America, they just, without a second thought, imposed their far better way. So they would think. But a little patience and things would have been revealed to them. I mean, try to see the movie called The Mission with Robert De Niro, and it's about the Portuguese conquest of the native population of Brazil. And, you know, even though the children could sing like angels, the best European music, they were still considered more like animals than like human beings. And this is all part of the conditioning of the rigid concrete mind. Okay. So groups is the word for this third type of mantra that's working, you know, along the vertical axis. And finally here, mantras that directly call the attention of one of the Deva Lords of a subplane or the mighty Deva Lord of a plane. They are known to very few and are only used by those who have taken high initiation. The way DK seems to speak of that, it's initiation beyond the fifth, or certainly beyond the fourth and third, high initiation, Chohanship of some kind. Now, what is it? In one place, it tells us that the Lord Kashiti, Rajadeva Lord Kashiti, and Agni are of the seventh initiation. In another place, I seem to remember that they are of the sixth initiation, or maybe it's their immediate assistants, you know, the ones that are closest to them in order, that are of the sixth degree, but they are certainly the equals of the masters found in the hierarchy and are consulted by Sanatkumara when exercising a workable approach to the divine plan. They are brought into the council. Let's see if I can find that. Not sure, you know, but it would be interesting to know. Now, you know, the Rajadeva lords are not necessarily of the, all of them of the same degree. Just the way planetary lords are synthesizing planets, lords of synthesizing planets, sacred planets and non-sacred planets. They're all planets and they share that much in common, but they're not necessarily of the same initiatic stratum. Not necessarily. So let's see. There's a couple of things here about Kashiti. Let's see what it says. We should bear in mind that the Deva Lords Agni, Varuna, Kashiti represent in the exoteric teaching the substance aspect of the dense body of the Logos, while the force flowing through the etheric body of the Logos is considered under various names such as Shiva, Surya, Brahma. Well, Shiva, cosmic subplane 1, Surya or Vishnu, cosmic subplane 2, and Brahma, cosmic subplane 3, then followed by Indra, and which he didn't mention, but we do have Agni, Varuna, and Kashiti, which he does mention. The Agni Shaitans, they're ruled by Kashiti. The Raja Lord Kashiti, the life of the physical plane. These devas are many in number, are of involutionary and evolutionary nature and of all grades and types. Ruling over them on the physical plane is the great Deva Kashiti. He is a Deva of rank and power equal to a Chohan of a race. That sounds like a sixth degree Rajadeva Lord, but at the same time, there are Chohans of the seventh degree. He presides over everything outside the human kingdom upon the physical plane, and he has for his council the four subordinate Deva lords of the four etheric levels or spheres. He, with the subordinate Devas, presides over a subsidiary council of seven Devas who handle all that concerns the Deva evolution and work with the greater and the lesser builders. The information and cosmic fire on the Deva kingdom is remarkable. The Rajadeva lord of the astral plane, Varuna, and his brother Kashiti have been called to the council chamber of the hierarchy for specific consultation, and just as the masters are endeavoring to prepare humanity for service when the world teacher comes, so these Raja lords are working along similar lines in connection with the Devas. They are arduous in their work. intense in their zeal, but much obstructed by man. So we can expect to find here as we do our work in Cosmic Fire and Depth, you know, readings along these lines. This is a book for centuries, I believe. And let's see, if I use Varuna, there's 11 references and we have the word sixth there. Let's see. The Rajat Deva Lord of the plane, the great Deva Varuna, who is the central life of the substance of the astral plane. Now that substance does continue to exist. It's not that when we say there is no astral plane, that we mean there's no substance. Without the substance, there would be an hiatus and inability to for the higher principles to get through to the lower. So he embodies the substance of the solar astral plane. A still greater Deva. Varuna, the planetary astral plane, right? Of our planetary scheme, and then the solar astral plane embodied by a still greater Deva. And he again, in his turn, reflects his prototype, the great cosmic entity who embodies the cosmic astral plane. It's amazing of the lives within lives. Well, here's some things about the sixth subplane and Varuna. And if I look at Varuna and the word seventh, I don't get anything. Raja, Deva, seven. Wait a second. Yeah, there's one reference, and I think we went over it. Devas of the seventh order, seventh ray, seventh plane, and somehow we looked at the idea of the seventh initiation. I mean, this is these are sections in Cosmic Fire that anybody really interested in the Deva Kingdom must study closely. Anyway, Chohanship is of the sixth degree and the seventh degree, and so we would expect these great lords to... I see probably you haven't seen what I've been doing. Yeah, that is the, I don't know, maybe you have. Anyway, handle the devas in groups. Okay, and mantras then that directly call the attention of one of the Deva lords of a subplane. In this case, it's the cosmic subplane, or the mighty Deva lord of the plane. So we have subplanes within the cosmic subplanes, which are known as our solar planes. They are known to very few and are only used by those who have taken high initiation, we might say the equivalent type of initiation that these great devas have taken. Well, during the Aquarian Age, working with the Gate of the Angels, you know, which is probably, I think, an astronomical location around the area where the great birds are found, you know, Hamsa in Aquarius and you know, the swan and the eagle in Capricorn and the gyre or falcon in Sagittarius, in that place is the gate of the angels. And we're going to learn much more scientifically about how to work with the appropriate level of deva that we should be working with. It, you know, it's not going to be anything quite this high, but it will be something equivalent to our own level of evolution, or not so far above it that we just cannot handle it. Okay. Now we seem to be coming to another section called the comprehension of force. And I've been at this for about an hour, and it seems to me that if I do go on, I should make that decision, but I should just force myself to go on because my nose will be on the keyboard. So let's see where we are here. It's just been a couple of pages. Yeah, well, we're still working with mantrams, and we'll be dealing with mantrams of fire, and this section on the comprehension of force is mantric in its nature, 4 pages long, so it's a substantial section, and I think, you know, that's enough for right now. And I'll send this out to you, and we will continue. It's program 40, which is coming next. So there, you know, programs of all different length. I've just decided I'm not going to become overly fastidious about ensuring that these programs are exactly 1 hour, whether 1 hour or 2 hours corresponds with the natural division in the book, then fine, but I'll more or less go with the natural divisions. So we all on the communications group wish you lots of love and many blessings, and we'll continue here as soon as may be feasible. Okay, and see you soon. Bye-bye.